This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the penultimate episode of the season of the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And after the conclusion of the Sky Bet EFL playoffs, only the second promotion place to the Football League from the National League remains outstanding. Congratulations to Brentford, back in the top flight for the first time since 1947 after winning the £178 million Sky Bet Championship final. Blackpool's win in the Sky Bet League One final means all three promoted teams from that division sealed their fate against Lincoln City. And if you think that's an obscure fact, then what about this? Carlos Mendes Gomez' penalty that won the Sky Bet League 2 final for Morecambe came 4.5 years after his previous club, West Didsbury and Chorlton, tweeted the reason for him missing a game was he was stuck in a lift. It's the official EFL podcast. And joining us to wrap up the final action of the 2020-21 Football League season, we salute a man who, after 20 years, 8 clubs, 757 career club appearances and 78 goals, 32 international caps for Jamaica, announced at the end of the season he would finally, at the age of 39, be hanging up his boots. But our first question for Joel Joshua Frederick Melvin Makanoff, and I should have asked him this 20 years ago, is where did Joby come from?
Oh, good question. One that I get asked a lot, Clem.
Well, you don't expect originality. It's nearly the end of the season.
First of all, thanks for declaring all my 5 names, which my parents thankfully gave me at birth. I only use a few of them. But no, it's a bit of a Jamaican thing. Obviously, my dad, being born in Jamaica, come to live in the UK. They just have a thing with their names that, although calling me Joel by birth, they like to have names that end with like a bit of an E sort of sound. So it was a bit of a nickname growing up. It's funny because nobody actually knew my real name was Joel. So I was at Wimbledon through the whole academy from, say, 11. And it wasn't till my first pre-season trip away with the first team at 18. We went to check in at the airport. And obviously all my stuff had been Joby Makanoff. But anything formal documentation is obviously Joel. So we go to check in and they've put me in as Joby Makanoff. So I go to get my passport out and they're looking at the ticket and the passport and it doesn't match up. And they literally like turn around and were like, what's Joel? Where's that come from? So that's my name. And they were like, no, your name's Joby. I was like, no, trust me, my name's Joel. Here's my passport. So it's just something that, again, my dad came up with. And football wise, I only really get called Joe if I get told off. So maybe my mum or my missus every now and again. But other than that, it's been Joby all the way along.
Knew it. You see, when I first met you playing for Wimbledon all those years ago with that fine crop of young players and those difficult circumstances, it should have been I just assumed it was your birth name. And that's what I would find if I went rifling through your sock drawer at home and found your passport. You've completely and totally left Leyton Orient.
Yep. All done. Obviously, had a fantastic last 4 years after a very mixed 2 years prior to that. From my point of view, went back to the club at a time where, it was in a bit of a bad place after the Italian era. We had fantastic owners come in. They wanted to get the club back, re-establish it in the league. Obviously getting out of the National League was the first port of call and obviously delighted to have been a part of that. Then we had obviously everything happen with Justin, which was a real difficult time for everybody at the club. It's coming on 2 years actually this week, since he passed. So, it was a real tough, particularly the first season, just trying to stabilise the club again, really. It felt like we'd done so well to get to a point and then we were completely rocked. I felt like everybody at the club did a really good job of stabilising and making sure we stayed in the league that first year. We improved this season. Again, for me personally, coming back after injury, played 40 games this year, which I was absolutely delighted with. And then obviously had a chance to manage at the end. So, having played, coached and then managed, for me personally, I felt like I've pretty much done everything, literally. The club decided they wanted to go with a little bit more experience at the end of the season. I felt like it was best to have a clean break, make sure we all leave on good terms, which I certainly did with Nigel, Kent, Martin and everybody else at the club, because that was important for me, you know, obviously the fans as well. And just, yeah, give myself a bit of a chance to reassess what I want to do, you know, have a little bit of time away. It's the first time, like you say, since I left school really at 16, that I can have that little bit of a step away from it all and just have a bit of a refresher in my own head of what I want to do moving forward, really.
I mean, was management like you thought it would be, like it said on the tin? And how much has having those 16 games adjusted your perspective on retiring as a player? Because obviously it's one of the natural paths, isn't it, to go into management. Obviously, I have been coaching the last few years, but having had the top job for those 16 games, has that kind of changed your perspective on where you want to go next?
I wouldn't say changed it. Again, from my point of view, I'm absolutely delighted that I've had the experience. I've got that insight that until you do it, Clem, I mean, as you get older, you kind of start looking at things a little bit more from a manager's perspective. When you're younger, it's all about you. Why am I not playing? Why am I not in the team? You know, and it's all about me, really, if I'm being honest. As you get older, you start to realise, you know, it is a difficult job. But until you're in that seat, until you are the one who has to make that decision, you know, tell one of the lads that he's not playing, you know, all those difficult things. Do you make a change in a game where things aren't going right? All these factors, you know, they're things that until you're stood there on the touchline, there's no coaching manual, there's no courses that can prepare you for those moments. So I certainly feel I'm better off for the experience. Was it an eye-opener? Absolutely. But has it given me a taste for wanting more? Definitely. You know, it's something that I think when you get things right and you've prepped all week, and again, we didn't have a lot of time, like any other manager up and down the country, such was the hectic nature of the fixture schedule. But when you have a good week and everything goes to plan and you go out on a Saturday and you execute what you've been working on, it's a great feeling. And certainly having stopped playing now, I can see why so many managers have that bust, because it is similar, you know, but probably more pressure, certainly than playing. I think the biggest, I wouldn't say difficulty or frustration I felt, and I was still playing, so that was another difficulty trying to combine it all. But when you're on the pitch, even if you're 2-0 down, as a player, I feel like I can still affect the game. I can go and make something happen. I can, or if I've made a mistake, I can go and make up for it. Whereas once that whistle goes, as a manager, you are almost, you know, I wouldn't say helpless, because you have decisions to make along the way. But in terms of what the centre half does at any given time, whether the striker takes his opportunity or not, you are not responsible for that at all. So there is a sense of helplessness at times. And I think that was probably, again, a real good eye-opener for me to experience that and learn how to deal with it. And I certainly, as I say, I'm better off for that 16 games and few months that I had the job, certainly. And yeah, it's given me a taste of, one, what it's about, but two, you know, whether I'd like to do it again in the future.
Well, listen, let's turn the next few minutes into a bit of a counselling session, shall we? You could see this as life coaching.
I could have done with this a couple of weeks ago, Clem, I think.
Seriously, you should have just rung me. Or we could maybe see this as professional development coaching. I mean, first of all, I guess there's been very few summers for you where the end of the season has come and you have not been attached. In other words, you've had a rough idea of where you're heading 6 weeks down the line. So that first morning, when your eyes open, the kids jump on top of you and all the rest of it, and you have no structure at all around you. How scary is that? Or is it a massive sense of relief?
It's not scary, first and foremost. You know, I've been working really hard, you know, in the last couple of years and trying to get my sort of head around the fact I would be retiring. From the moment I left Orient the first time around at 34, I kind of was started preparing at that point that this could be my last season. It is difficult as you get older to get contracts, maybe to fit into where you want to be at that stage of your life. Kids come into it, of course, a location, you know, the level that you're playing at comes into it. So I have been preparing myself, you know, mentally, and also trying to do some things behind the scenes. I think, just as you say, that ability to be able to switch off. And at the moment, it feels a little bit like a normal end of season, because we do get, you know, a real hectic end. And then it is a bit of a, but that lasts for a couple of weeks. And you're already, as you say, thinking about next season, whether that's physically for me getting up and going out running and keep myself ticking over, whether it's from a coaching point of view, what we're doing in pre-season, you know, what are the fixtures looking like? Transfers, which we started doing, actually, believe it or not, the last couple of months. Of course, you have to look at recruitment and things like that. So it would have been a very hectic summer at Orient if I'd have stayed. So the fact I haven't got that, again, I wouldn't say a relief, but it is quite a nice feeling at times where I can just get up and just say, right, what does Joby Mackenough want to do today? Not what do I need to do for Leyton Orient or for Reading or whoever. And again, I suppose it's a bit of me time. That being said, as much as I'm enjoying it, I know what I'm like. And once the season starts, I start seeing lads going back to training,
yeah,
you know, the games rolling round. I think that's the bit where I'll probably start for the first time sort of going, oh, like, am I really missing it? Or, you know, am I gagging to get back in somewhere? But at the minute, it feels like a nice off season where I'm able to just switch off for a little bit.
Have you always been throughout your playing career very self-disciplined? This is about to cue a question about whether you've allowed yourself to get up and have a Mars bar sandwich one morning and stuff like that. Because that the physical side of things will almost certainly not just have an effect on your physique, but will also have an effect on your mental health as well, will it not? So have you allowed yourself to do a few bits that you wouldn't normally do, or are you still in the disciplined groove?
No, you're absolutely right. I think for me, I've always tried to do things the right way. So I would always allow myself, again, that initial period after a season to just shut down completely. And that means no physical activity. That means eat and drink what I like. I'm fortunate.
What was your guilty pleasure food-wise? What would you normally deny yourself over the course of a season?
Yeah, I wouldn't say deny. I just think probably a bit more fast food stroke takeaways. I'm quite big on yeah, home-cooked food and freshly cooked food. I'm, again, yeah, fortunate. My dad being Jamaican and my mum, you know, really bought into that way of life in terms of fresh food and home-cooked food. So, yeah, definitely had a little bit more takeaways. I've had a few more beers, I've got to be honest. I'm not a big alcohol drinker. But since I've switched off, I had a few beers. I think I had three days in a row, I had a few, mate. So not to say I'm not going over the edge with it, don't get me wrong. But
no, but it was nice, like, 3 days in a row you had beers.
No, honestly, mate. Yeah, I know. So that was quite nice just to not worried about it. But yeah, it's a definite sense of, you know, I can chill out a little bit. But as you say, the mental side of it is massive as well. And I think because I have been so active for so long, yeah, what I do get, if when I haven't done anything for a couple of weeks, is that not fog, but I feel like I need to do something physically, which then makes me feel so much better. So I'm at that stage now where, unfortunately, it's raining today. I would have gone out probably for a little tickle, a little run, but probably next week. Again, I hope I'm not going to keep putting it off and I speak to you in 3 weeks later and you're like, have you been for that run yet? And I'm like, no.
Well, we'll be able to tell, Joby, won't we? Because we might have to buy a wide-angle lens for you in order to fit onto
If the chins start coming, then you'll know I haven't been. But no, I think for mental health, as you say, and just keeping that clear head, it is good for me. I will definitely get out and do some exercise and, you know, keep ticking over. Again, that'll be just nice that it is just for me. I'm not having to hit a target as such or, you know, do it in a certain time. It will be just to get out, keep fit and, you know, keep my body ticking over, which, you know, it needs to.
Because there'll be a lot of people listening to this sort of quite envious that maybe you've got a level of financial self-sufficiency at rather a young age. Most people, non-footballers, would probably have to work until mid-50s, 60 to pay off mortgages and all that kind of stuff. But a blank sheet of paper can be a very scary place as well, can't it? And also a sense of purpose. I've talked to very high-profile footballers who've achieved so much trophies, the lot, but they almost have to, like, get a gym 45 minutes drive away in order to have a routine, to do their routine, to then have a cup of coffee, to then drive back, to almost fill their days up. So these are all considerations that we as normal human beings don't get to see.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that's a really important point because I think unless you are, you know, real top end Premier League or maybe someone who's dropped down to, you know, the Championship and earning unbelievable money, most EFL players, if you've had an EFL career, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, we're very fortunate, but it's not a case of once you finish, you're going to be able to sit around and not work at all. So again, I think that's the biggest thing on both sides of it. Yes, financially, you need to go out, you know, you're used to an income coming in and all of a sudden that stops. And again, there's a lot of lads that I know that are used to not just an income, but a certain level of lifestyle that comes with the level they're playing at. And all of a sudden when that is gone, there can be a big void of, right, where's the next paycheck coming in? And if they haven't managed their money properly over the years, which again, for me, is a big issue in football that needs addressing, it needs some kind of work on it to help lads know what to do with that money and make sure they are a bit more secure when they finish.
Have you looked after yourself? Have you always been good on that front?
I'd like to say, yeah, I was fortunate to get put with an accountant at quite a young age, sort of 19, 20, that I've had throughout my whole career, still with him today. And again, nothing silly, just sensible, making sure, again, mortgages are right. But this is the thing, Clem, you've got kids at 18, 19, 20 that are in a position to go and get a mortgage because of their salaries, but they don't know what a mortgage is. They don't know what the best mortgage is for them. You know, again, it might be certain investments, buy-to-let mortgages, that changes things slightly. You know, different types of investments, pensions, there's a lot of sort of, what's the word, complications that can come with that. So yeah. I've been fortunate. I feel like I've done the right things, you know, with my money. I've never been lavish or wasted money in terms of getting things I don't really need. So from that point of view, you know, I'm in a position, the way I look at it, and I say to a lot of young players, is by the time you finish, you should be in a position to have a really good head start on a lot of people that are our age, you know, like mid to late 30s, you know, if you do the right things, it's not going to be enough to go and sit around and not do anything, but then you should have an idea of what you want to do next. And I think that's the next big thing. I've been preparing. A lot of lads' careers finish very suddenly, whether it be an injury, a lack of an offer, you know, you don't get that contract that you think you're going to get. And all of a sudden, that's when that void that you're speaking about comes up. So I think trying to prepare yourself, whether it is work, whether it is giving yourself a routine, is massive. And certainly for me, you know, doing the bits that I have been media-wise has been fantastic. There'll be some opportunities for me next year to get into and, you know, really keep myself ticking over. One, to stay involved in football, because it's what we all love. And I certainly want to be involved in some capacity. And two, as you say, give yourself something to work towards and still try and achieve things and, you know, get up for and get out of bed for, really.
Joby McEnough's fact sheet is available on All Matters Finances from the official EFL podcast. Please send a stamped addressed envelope to producer Dave, courtesy of Darkened Edit Suite, and he'll send you one out. There is one final question on this front. It's just whether the missus can offer you an opportunity to work. Is there a little role for you with kettle boobs?
Yes, well, I've actually been unloading boxes this morning, Clem. I had to get it in before this. So that's my job at the moment. I'm sort of the lorry unloader. She had a big delivery in the summer, which was honestly like carnage. We had sort of 1,500.
You better explain, Joby, because I've just lobbed the word kettle boobs out there.
Right, okay. So my wife, she customises kettlebells. So she, a friend of hers years ago, was really into fitness, and there wasn't any pretty kettlebells for women to use. They're all standardized black, quite masculine, you know, standard issue kettlebells. So she is very good on the design front. She's really good at things like that. So she came up with an idea to customize kettlebells, actually, and started off doing it by hand. She'd go and buy them individually, spray them, design them, you know, and then gradually it's built up. She's been doing it about 3 years now. So now she's getting them, you know, mass produced, sent over, and she's doing really well. She's been fantastic. It's you know, great to see her, something that she's passionate about. But yeah, it's a very heavy duty job in terms of literally weight. I'm lifting 20 kilogram kettlebells, 16 all the time. So I'm the muscle. So I think from a fitness point of view, I might actually be all right, Clem, to be fair. But yeah, have a look if you can. It's she's doing all right, yeah.
I'm fortified with the news that this is a double-pronged attack. A, it's a money-making scheme that your missus has got, and B, it's keeping you fit. When Perfect. I look at the Sky Bet Championship playoff final, I do think back to yourself, because in your time at Reading, obviously, this would be 2011-12, you get promoted, you have that full season in the Premier League, but obviously 10 years ago the season had just finished, and the most traumatic experience, Justin Edinburgh's passing aside, of your whole career, to play the Championship playoff final and lose it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It was I think looking back on it now, the fact that we went and won the league the next year, it takes a little bit of the pain away after the event. But certainly that I remember the day so clearly. you know, I'll always say that for me, that is the hardest experience I've had in the game, particularly at my age and having so worked so hard to get there and all the near misses up to that point. And probably that feeling of it's not going to happen. You know, every player wants to play in the Premier League, you know, and I think when you work so hard and dedicate yourself and do the right things to do it, when you get so close and the nature of the game being so up and down, you know, we were done, dead and buried at halftime, 3-0 down against a very good Swansea team, to get back in it 3-2. We're literally a couple of inches away. We hit the post. If that goes in, for me, we go on and win the game. They were out on their feet. And then, you know, for them to then come back and nick the game, it was, you know, devastating. I remember going up, you know, you speak about family and support systems. Obviously, my mum and dad were there. And I remember going up to the box and, you know, that just started literally crying my eyes out. You know, my dad was there and he was just like, listen, man, like, you've done everything you can. You know, everything happens for a reason. And I was like, how can you say that at this point? Like, I've just lost a playoff final, you know, and luckily, and he'll always remind me now, he said, oh, I knew what I was saying. If that didn't happen, you wouldn't have gone and won the league the next year. And I was like, yeah, but I would have been the Premier League a year earlier, Dad. Do you know what I mean? Like, so, nah, listen, it all worked out, but tough. You can't explain the devastation. And to be fair to Brentford, you know, it's a massive achievement to come back from that, you know, with a lot of the same lads, having lost their better players, a little bit similar to us. You know, we lost Shane Long, we lost Matt Mills, who were very, very key players for us. So to go again and then for them get promoted and us get promoted, you know, I know how difficult that is. So they deserve a lot of credit for what they've had to go through and get there.
I guess the question is, will their whispering talents recruitment model, in other words, looking in slightly more obscure markets, will it work with what they'll need to add for the Premier League? Because there's no brush-up time, is there? You kind of need to hit the ground running, because if you don't, even six games in, if you haven't picked up any points, you're done.
Yeah, I'll be honest, Clem. I think that was probably certainly my biggest learning lesson, and I think the club as a whole, and I speak to Brian a lot, you know, after that experience. And I think...
This is Brian McDermott.
Brian McDermott, our manager, yeah. And I think that, and listen, the club at the time, and there was a lot going on with a takeover and... It had changed the way it was run, but we didn't really go out, with the greatest respect to the lads that came in, and go and get real established Premier League quality. And for me, that is what you need. That's what Brentford need. And again, that's not to say you go out and get a 32-year-old, you know, past it, washed up. I'm not saying there ain't any good 32-year-olds, because there are, that can give you great value and that experience. But I think they have to be careful there isn't another up-and-coming player for this level. You know, they've done incredibly well, really well run football club, great model. But for me to step up and stay up, they're going to need three or four, what I would say, a real good quality Premier League players. And then they can still keep that production line coming, but without having the, say, the worry. It's very easy to get caught up in relegation issues when you go up. So, you know, they need to go up and stay up and try and build, really.
Yeah, but have to compromise a bit, which is that ready-mades are not going to come for the same value points as ones that you think are going to be able to step up and can give a little bit of time to.
Yeah, I think, listen, it's all about the balance. And listen, Ivan Toney weren't cheap, let's be honest about it. You know, they went and spent a lot of money on him to get him, and he's provided what they needed to get
up. He was cheap in Premier League terms.
In Premier League terms, but, you know, what I'm saying is they went and replaced, you know, Ollie Watkins with, you know, a player that they went and invested in. The point, I suppose, I'm making, whatever the value, whether it's Championship value or Premier League value, if that keeps you in the Premier League, it's good value. Whatever they paid for Ivan Toney, it's been unbelievable value, because his goals have pretty much helped them get promoted. So, again, without going crazy, you know, they've got a fantastic recruitment policy there. I'm sure they'll already be planning for that and looking at maybe a few gems that they can come and get in and help them. But again, for me, I just feel like they need, you know, a little bit of that experience and Premier League pedigree to help what is already a really good squad.
So Brentford win the Skybet Championship playoff final. Blackpool do it in League One. And it's hard not to look at the work of Neil Critchley, who was Liverpool's under-23s manager, twice stepped up to cover for Jurgen Klopp last season, and see a quite remarkable transformation, actually, in terms of the way they play, in terms of some great recruitment, certainly from the loan market. He's actually made it over the second half of the season. He's actually made it look easy.
Yeah, well, again, I think the biggest compliment I can play him is coming from a youth environment. I know one or two of the lads at Blackpool well, and speaking to them earlier on in the season, there probably was a little bit, not too much emphasis, but an ideology of that youth team philosophy. Let's go out, let's play, let's be expansive, let's, you know, League One, League Two, they're hard, hard leagues, and you have to have, you know, a real firm defensive structure to get out and be hard to beat, which they weren't to start the season. Had a terrible start, really, really bad. And I think, again, the credit I have to give him is he's in a new environment himself and he's seen what it takes. So there were a little couple of tweaks to the way they played. They became a little bit more pragmatic, weren't as open, weren't as expansive. They were a really good counter-attacking team, and a lot of their good stuff over the second half of the season was built on that defensive organisation, you know, clean sheets, but with a real threat on the counter, you know, great pace, great athleticism. You know, Jerry Yates was fantastic, but he was very well assisted by a lot of the guys around him. And he put together a team that was really good at winning football matches. And it wasn't just about being the best looking team. You know, they're very efficient. So again, to come out of where he did and actually see it as quick as he did, you know, I give him massive praise, and, you know, he's done a fantastic job. And, you know, they for me, and I'm not just saying that, I did pick them to get through. Their form was fantastic, and yeah, they had that momentum going into it. And, you know, really, really well done to Neil Critchley and everyone at Blackpool.
Yeah. And Morecambe, who won the Sky Bet League Two final, also had great momentum. And I love the story of Carlos Mendes Gomez. I don't know if you've heard it, Joby, just in case some of our listeners haven't. He was born in Senegal. He moved to Lanzarote as a result of his dad's work when he was a really young child. His dad was in the construction industry. In his mid-teenage years, he had a cousin who was at university in Madrid. So he went off to stay with him for a couple of weeks, took himself off and managed to get himself into the Atletico Madrid Academy. But then his dad put his foot down and said, you've got to move with the family to Manchester, where his dad's job in the construction industry came up, and he had to regroup in the ninth tier of non-league football and was eventually discovered by Morecambe playing for his college team. So I know it was a bit of a contentious penalty and Newport County fans are not happy and stuff, but his personal journey, I just adore stories like that, Joby.
It's what makes, I think, the game in this country in particular what it is, Clem, the opportunity to rise through the leagues, to be playing at the level he has done, and, you know, the fact he's gone so quickly and performed so well this season. Again, you have to give Derek Adams great credit for providing him. You know, he talks about, you know, Carlos Mendes Gomez, about a family environment, about the boys looking out for him as soon as he came in there, feeling comfortable. And again, as a player, that's when you get your best football, when you feel confident, you're in a group that you can go out and express yourself. He is almost their X factor. They are very, again, very solid, very dogged, determined, disciplined. There's so many words I could throw out to describe Morecambe, having played against them ourselves. Yeah. You know, that's them in a nutshell. They don't change. They don't get flustered. I remember we played them. We were 1-0 up at halftime, absolutely cruising, thinking should be out of sight. They regroup, come out second half, and they're a different team. Cole Stockton, the two boys in midfield, Diogo Gara and Songo were fantastic. Sam Lavelle at the back has been a real solid presence for them all season. And again, it just shows that sometimes it's not a group of players that have got the best individuals, it is, can you be the best team? And certainly Morecambe, you know, given their league position, for me, were the best team to get through that playoffs, and that's why they won it. So again, you know, can't speak highly enough of them. You know, low wage budget, you know, real togetherness about what they do, and some real good footballers as well. So fantastic story, going back to Mendes Gomez. It's what, again, I love about certainly the structure in this country and the pyramid system that enables you to be able to do that. So, you know, well played to him and Morecambe.
Yeah. Morecambe sort of play in the character and personality of their former manager, because Derek Adams has left to pursue an opportunity elsewhere. He's been strongly linked with the Bradford City job just a few days afterwards. So I texted him actually last night as we record this just to say, wow, you didn't even give me a chance to wish you congratulations. To which he came back and said, yes, we had a very good day at Wembley. So of course I then texted him back and said, when you're ready to talk, I look forward to it, but many congratulations for the club and for you personally for your success. I look forward to it. Absolutely giving nothing away whatsoever, as I wasn't really scraping too much. It's a strange old situation, but his chairman, Rod Taylor, actually said he acted as a catalyst for positive change and encouraged everybody to aim higher. The field of possibilities opened up. And I would suggest, Joby, that is what Gareth Southgate has done with the England squad. You know, there was a point when he first took over where people were talking about there was only 30% representation in the Premier League from English players. But Gareth kind of worked with what he's got, embraced young players. And we're talking about this on here because 23 of the original 26 man squad has had some sort of connection to the EFL. They've either come through academies, made their debuts for EFL clubs, or maybe made their debuts in EFL competitions. But, well, listen, the touch paper has been lit. I know I'm asking a Jamaican international about this, but the touch paper has been lit and expectations are very high of England going into the delayed Euro 2020.
Yeah, I mean, coming back to the point about how many have come through, you know, the EFL system, again, I think it strengthens our point and our belief in how important that system is. You know, for me personally, having come through it myself through an academy, there's no better place to learn your trade, you know, and there's so many players now that are at elite clubs, and for them to get into their first teams in the Premier League, it is difficult. When you look at the money, quality of players they can bring over, not just in the first team, but in academies as well. So those opportunities a lot of the time are in the Championship, in League One and League Two. And what it shows is the competitiveness of those leagues. You can't get it anywhere else. You know, even if you're in the, you only have to look at some of the results on the last day, teams that had nothing to play for against teams that are trying to get in playoffs, trying to avoid relegation, they're going out and winning games. So again, the integrity and the level of competition for me is what helps to breed these younger players and instill that winning mentality. Again, to see the development of a lot of them now within the England squad is fantastic, you know, and it's great that we have got that in this country, and it's something that needs to be supported and certainly looked after, you know, as we move forward, because there's so much emphasis on the Premier League these days, but there's such great work happening and so many fantastic clubs up and down the EFL. And again, for me, that is the lifeblood of football in this country. And, you know, it's fantastic to see all those boys that have come through those systems and now representing England on a stage that I'm sure when they were starting off or going off on their first loan, Harry Kane's a massive example, you know, with the Leyton Orient link, his first loan, how important that was for him in his development, you know, that he's now coming back to help support the club. He says he wouldn't be where he is now without that loan at the time. So it gives the boys a real good appreciation of what real football's about. And again, for now, moving forward, we've got a great chance, certainly. I know you say I'm a Jamaican international. You know, on my dad's side, I'm obviously, my mum's English. I was born and raised here. And
oh, there was a clear we in there. There was definitely in there. Joel, wasn't there? There was definitely a we in there.
Definitely. So it's great to see us going into a tournament with real hope, not we feel like we could do well. It's based on, listen, we had a good World Cup. You know, the last one around, I think with Gareth, what he's doing is picking players majority of the time that are out and they're performing well and they've deserved their opportunity. And he's created, which again, something we've not had for a long time, a club environment. So you can see the lads are really enjoying, whether they're at Man United, Man City, Arsenal, Borussia Dortmund, when they're together, there's a real good vibe and energy around the squad, around the team. And we're starting to see that in performances. So I think given the geographical issues that we're having with the Euros and the fact that obviously England are playing a lot of their games at home, I think will be a massive advantage. And certainly when you look through the list of teams, Belgium, they'll be up there. France, they'll be up there. you know, for me, we're right in the mix, and you know, really hoping for a Euro 96-esque summer this year.
Although it will be one where it is played to the backdrop of the continuing COVID pandemic. And I was a little shocked to see some of the special rules that were introduced by the UEFA Executive Committee. And they include the fact that a game will still go ahead, even if there's a COVID outbreak in a camp, so long as the country in question has at least 13 players available, one of which must be a goalkeeper. If they don't, there can be a delay of up to 48 hours and the game, they will try to reschedule. If it can't be rescheduled, then the team responsible for the match not taking place will be considered to have forfeited it and lost 3-0. And the other little anomaly detail as well is, if any member of the appointed referee team has to be replaced, UEFA can, in exceptional circumstances, appoint a match official of the same nationality as one of the teams playing and a referee that is not on the FIFA list, which I guess all of which goes to underline what extraordinary times we live in, what an incredible season it has been and continues to be as we go into a world-acclaimed tournament, Joby.
Yeah, I think we all knew there were going to be hurdles and obstacles to get over to get this on. It's obviously been delayed already. What I will say is now with the amount of time we've had in dealing with this in football and in sport in general, you know, there's some real stringent measures that have to be taken place to make sure that, you know, you, obviously the hope is that there are no outbreaks. But listen, this is something that we have not a lot of control over. But I'm sure every team, every country, you know, is very well protected and the testing is very, very stringent. And even if there was an outbreak, then hopefully that can be minimised in terms of how much effect it has on a squad and dealt with very, very quickly. Of course, there are things that, you know, are just out of our control. So I think it's just about, as we have done with the whole pandemic, getting through it as best we can, everyone trying to make the best of the situation. And hopefully, you know, health is always the number one priority, of course. But, you know, we can have a tournament that isn't sort of interrupted too much. And I'm hoping certainly after everything that's gone on, you know, with the reintroduction of fans and that going okay so far, you know, that we can have an almost, I wouldn't say normal, but something, you know, approaching normal when it comes to a nice summer of football. I'm certainly looking forward to it, man. I think everyone is. And, you know, there should be some good games on show. And yeah, fingers crossed everything goes smoothly.
Yeah, just not too many packets of Pringles while you're sitting there, mate, bearing in mind the previous conversation that we've had. I want to finish, and I want to keep the international theme, just by going back to pay tribute to you, because there were 11 years between your debut for Jamaica and your second cap, which means that 31 of your 32 caps for Jamaica have come since you've been 30?
Yeah. Bit older.
Which is an astonishing achievement that when most players are winding down, you actually put the afterburners on and had all those treks across the Atlantic to go and play and actually put yourself under even greater strain. So, mate, I've got to pay incredible tribute to you that you kept playing to 39 and actually went up a few gears towards the end rather than coming down.
Yeah, listen, I'll be honest, it was a strange international career in that sense that there was a massive gap, you know, but once I went back, it was some of the best times of my career. You know, we had a real wicked squad of players like the likes of Wes Morgan, Adrian Mariappa, Gareth McCleary would go from here. There was a group of sort of 7-8 of us that would always go from the UK. And we had a fantastic relationship with a lot of the Jamaican lads. Rudy Austin, who was at Leeds fans will know him very well, was, you know, captain at the time. And it was just a real fantastic experience going to, you know, a couple of Copa Americas, the Gold Cups, you know, and I think the reason I probably wrapped up so many, we had football tournaments every summer. So again, for me as a player, getting to experience that, you know, going away for 2, 3, 4 weeks, depending on how well you did. And that tournament life, when you're with a good squad, and that's why I can see England doing well, the players enjoy being with each other. You can see that. And you can't be successful if you don't, because you do start people getting on each other's nerves and maybe there's divides in the camp. They do show over time, especially in this climate where they're going to be in such a small bubble. But yeah, man, I loved it. I can't speak highly enough of my experience with the national team. You know, for me to be able to go and represent certainly one of my countries was a very proud moment for me, my family, and you know, I loved every minute. So again, the fatigue, I've got to be honest, when you're pitching up and your downtime's in a hotel in Jamaica or Costa Rica, they're not the worst places to go and play, Clem, I've got to be honest, mate.
Yeah. On the other hand, I do want to say thank you. Thank you for committing half your life to English football, the vast majority of it in the EFL. Have a well-earned rest. Don't let yourself go to seed. And will you still come back and see us at some point in the future on the Official EFL podcast?
Listen, one thing I will have a bit more on my hands is time next year. So I'm
don't tell producer Dave that. You'll be getting a call every week. He'll have you in his little production spreadsheet even now. Right, are you available on this day, on this day, on this day? He'll have your life planned out before you. You'll have management opportunities coming up and you won't be able to take them because he's breathing down the back of your pants saying, you committed to doing the 17th of October. Great to see you, mate. Have a lovely summer.
Nice, Glenn. Thank you, mate. Take care.
That's it for this episode. A big thank you once again to Joel, Joshua, Frederick, Melvin, Joby, Mackenough. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us next time when we'll wrap up the 2020-21 season with the best of the guests for this calendar year on
the Official EFL Podcast.